Hello everyone, this is Space Cafe Podcast and I am Marcus. If you go to Scotland and travel all the way north until you reach the furthest tip of the mainland, you can just about guess the location of our tale today. 100 kilometers at sea to the north lie the picturesque Shetland Islands, an idyllic archipelago in the Atlantic Ocean, 23,000 inhabitants, farmers, fishermen, oil and gas industry employees. A car ride to the north takes 2.5 hours. At the very tip, there is not much going on. I can recommend a quick look at Google Maps. Green meadows as far as the eye can see. But if you look closer, you'll find a most peculiar place, worthy of closer inspection. In the middle of these picturesque meadows, there is a pub, a distillery, and a church. That wouldn't be particularly special yet. But wait, these three buildings form part of the Shetland Space Center, a spaceport with its own distillery. Naturally, I went searching and came across an unusual story, to say the least. The vice president of the Space Center agreed to this edition of the Space Cafe podcast without hesitation, and as it turns out, it was a good call. A very good one, in fact.
Yeah, Marcus, thank you so much for being so accommodating.
Welcome, Yvette Hopkins, to the Space Cafe podcast.
I hope it meets your expectations.
So what is it with this pub and the distillery right next to the Space Center facilities? So, I mean, like, this is a pretty cool place.
So, Marcus, the fact that you've honed in on that says something about you, my friend. So, yeah, if someone were to take a look at Google Maps, what you would find right now is not a green site for the Shetland Space Center, but a little bit of a brown site. So what you're looking at is pretty much the old RAF or Royal Air Force Saxaford post or airbase. Mm-hmm. And so what you're looking at is indeed something called the Shetland Reel Distillery, which is actually closely associated with the Shetland Space Center. The pub was formerly a brewery from a fabulous gentleman called Sonny up on Unst. And then there's a medical center, which is currently serving as our headquarters right now. So it's kind of interesting. It's got medical and dental and chapel, which is where our offices reside. And all of those are being refurbished right now so that we can invite all the visitors in that supply building, but also our operational center will actually be in the brewery. So there's all sorts of interesting connections you can make with space and booze and the type
awesome
of food that
like,
we are.
you have spirit from above and spirit from below.
That's you, darn Skippy, we do.
All right. So Yvette, what is the Shetland Space Center all about?
Yeah, no, that's a fabulous question, Marcus. So it's very simple, and that is to help support the UK government goal to get 10% of the global space industry market. We are part of that. We understand that. Our goal is safe. I stress the word safe, easy access for low Earth orbit rockets. So basically small sats in the LEO, low Earth orbit location. So it's just very simple. Now, I will tell you, I need to explain that it's not just about placing satellites in low Earth orbit and helping all of us down here on the ground with our comms and Earth observation, et cetera, et cetera. But we also have, there's three legs to our stool, if you will. And that is, there's a launch capability at the Shetland Space Center. There is a data capability at the Shetland Space Center. And then there's also what we call accommodation. But underneath that, houses, tourism, our visitor center, and a lot of the activities that will be ongoing. So it really is, it's a full-bodied experience, if you will, in a footprint that has, that's steeped in history, military history, and just phenomenal Shetland history.
Fascinating. I could imagine that it's already becoming a tourist site, because if I were to visit the Shetland Islands, would I be able to go there?
Listen to me now and hear me later, Marcus, which means don't pay attention to me. Listen to me. If you must put Shetland on your bucket list, on your, as soon as we're free to go after the pandemic, that you put that on your list, because despite the fact what people may think in terms of Shetland ponies and all the sort of caricatures of Shetland, it is a phenomenal place to be, live, work, play.
Speaking of Shetlanders, are they called Shetlanders?
Is the right word, but I will tell you what you cannot say. You cannot say the Shetlands when you refer to the island. It's the Shetland Islands. And I only say that because it is a personal pet peeve of every Shetlander, but nobody will say it because everybody is wildly polite.
Okay. So what do the Shetlanders think about the Space Center? So if you go to a local pub, is the Space Center a mad project or a welcome business opportunity? So what do people think about the Space Center? Because I picture the Shetland Islands as romantic, a romantic place with ponies and sheep and a bunch of fishermen and bearded people and pubs and breweries.
So there's a little bit of that also. So to answer your question, a little bit of both. When the idea really took hold in 2017 and the Shetland Space Center was established, of course people were like, say what? We're going to do what? There's going to be a Shetland Space Center, what? But the truth of the matter is the people on UNST have welcomed for many years, actually for millennia, dating back to the Vikings, but in recent history, in World War II, there was an outpost there. It was called RAF Ska. Then during the Cold War, there was obviously RAF Saxiford. So the people of UNST are extremely welcoming. So what I would say overall is we, the Shetland Space Center, enjoy the support of the Shetland community. We do not take it for granted. We have built in multiple layers of mechanisms to ensure that we've got constant communication. We hear, we try and brief, we work closely with the local authorities, we work closely with community leaders, we work with schools. And so absolutely, I think overall, we enjoy that close partnership. Yeah, it's not new to the folks, and people are welcoming it. This used to be an oil and gas location. And while it still is, I think we all understand in terms of the world and renewables where the world's headed. From a business opportunity, the business community has been absolutely second to none in terms of support for the Shetland Space Center, and understand with its long history of supply chain and working with the oil and gas industry that there's opportunities here for all.
Who's behind the Space Center? Who had this mad idea to put a rocket on the Shetland Islands?
Okay, so it does have an interesting history. First and foremost, I would say the founders are Frank Strang and his wife, Debbie Strang. They bought Saxiford many years ago when the wall came down and we took down the RAF Saxiford, that military base. And they bought it and turned it into a resort, which is fabulous. But there was a seminal event, which was something, and it's difficult to find on the internet, but it's called the SEPTA Report. That was an independent report that was commissioned by the UK Space Agency and others. And that independent report, when asked the basic question, where is the best place in the United Kingdom to put a spaceport and also for data downlink, it was the Shetland Islands. And that is due to a multitude of things. But that SEPTA report just really opened the eyes of several key individuals. And from there, started to really explore, okay, what is happening? And quite honestly, the team, we're not space experts, but we are problem solvers. And the team is, not to make this a military sort of thing, but the team has a military background, understood the importance of space as it relates to all of our lives, to the environment, and the phenomenal opportunity that presented itself. Mm-hmm. I'd also be remiss if I didn't say that the local authority, the Shetland local authority, the Shetland Islands Council, have been absolutely supportive, phenomenal, and have been partners all along. And so really, even some of the local councillors and politicians early days really encouraged us to continue to look at and explore the business case. And the business case was there.
So who's your typical customer?
So a typical customer, the ones that are, as of this recording, that have been announced, which are Lockheed Martin and ABL Space Systems, we're looking at small sat customers. So that's anything up to 20 to 1,000 kgs. This is LEO, small sat constellation, both orbital and suborbital. We've also, as part of our first space-based activity, had, there's balloons, B2 companies like B2 Space, who are also looking at the transport of satellites and rockets using that particular technology. So we've also hosted that. Our other customers are going to be downlink customers. So those folks that want to bring down data. Some of it is free data, such as the Sentinel that will be brought down, and then also commercial and non-commercial customers. We have, because of our northern latitude, we enjoy the ability to bring down and have more passes of satellites, so more opportunities, more contact time to bring down that data. And then thirdly, of course, is the tourism, and people are wildly curious about Shetland and all the things that are going on here. Mm. So that would, I would say those are our customers.
So is the Shetland Space Center a one-stop shop? So you have the infrastructure and you also have the rockets. So who provides the rockets, or are they part of the package?
No, so thank you for asking that, Marcus. So the rockets come from multitude of places. So in this particular case, we have ABL Systems, but we have already clients we have not yet announced, primarily from Europe and North America. And other places around the globe. As soon as those become in the public domain, we'll obviously announce those. And those rocket companies are just fabulous. I think one of the ones that have C6 systems out of Canada is one of our customers, our future customers. We just had High Impulse out of Germany, which has conducted their first rocket engine test, which was really exciting, and obviously we'll expect to see them come back repeatedly. So I hope that answers your question.
Sure.
But yeah, we have
to bring your rocket. We have the facility.
That's absolutely right.
Okay.
We've got the facility. We're willing to download. We're willing to put you up in space safely, responsibly. And oh, by the way, we're going to feed you and show you a good time while you're here.
Nice. Yvette, what not everyone knows is that Scotland, which is not the Shetland Islands now, but it's in the neighborhood, so to say, is one of the big players in space.
Yeah.
So we're now making the radius a little larger. So why is that? What is going on here? Why Scotland? Why the Shetland Islands?
Okay, so it is true. I talk a lot about all that Scotland has to offer, and it is an incredible ecosystem. Yes, the United Kingdom is just really opening up in terms of the space industry and the space market. But there is something wildly exciting about Scotland. If you take, for example, Glasgow. So Glasgow produces more satellites than any other city outside of in Europe, number one. And I think outside of Southern California. So we've got the satellite makers here. And then when you think about Edinburgh, which the city of Edinburgh has poured an enormous amount of cash flow into creating what they're calling the Innovation Center of Europe. This is where your downstream services, incredible data applications are taking place. The third part is the ability to put those rockets into space with those payloads, and that's the spaceports. And while Shetland will be the first vertical launch, an operational spaceport in the United Kingdom, there are other spaceports that are also, because of Scotland's northern latitude, that are also going through their business cases. And so we've got, for example, Prestwick, which is taking a look, which is on the northern coast, which is taking a look at a horizontal capability. And then there are other spaceports that are in various states of just beginning to take a look at their business cases. But we are probably the most advanced. We are the most advanced, which is really good. And we'll be the first to put up a satellite. And we bookend ourselves. We consider ourselves bookending, not only up in Shetland, but also with our partners in England and Cornwall as they take a look at their horizontal launch capability. But to answer your specific question, the ecosystem of Scotland is phenomenal.
Fascinating. Yvette, you don't sound Scottish by accent. So what brings you to the Shetland Islands?
So that's thank you for asking that. I usually sometimes start meetings with all of my Scottish colleagues and say, I know I sound a little funny.
But can you do Scottish?
No, and trust me, I wouldn't even try. So I'm half Shetlander. My entire family lives, except for one cousin, we all live on Shetland. And it is my home. And while I spent time in other locations around the world, when I got home to Shetland, when I retired and got home to Shetland, and established myself there, I did everything in my power to become a part of my community and just ingratiate myself not only to Shetland, but to Scotland and the UK writ large.
Mm. You retired from an extensive military career, which we will talk about in a second. But what, like, the military career was not space focused. So what brings you into the space industry on the Shetland Islands?
I'll just start off by saying that, you know, I was I am half American. And so my career in the US military was as a career military intelligence officer in the Army. And so I want to correct you just a little bit. As an intelligence officer, I did have lots of dealings with space-based activities, but they were downstream. I was taking the data that came from whether it was imagery or geospatial analysis and integrating that with other pieces of intelligence to create a picture so that decision makers could make decisions. So I'm not a complete novice to space. Mm-hmm. And now on this end, of the space spectrum, if you will, or the industry, the way it came to be, why and how I came to be with the Shetland Space Center is serendipity. So in 2017, I had retired home to Shetland. I was tired and, you know, trying to think about, you know, the way ahead. And I opened our local newspaper, the Shetland Times, comes out once a week. And I saw this article about a gentleman that was trying to stand up a spaceport. And of course, I'm still in military mindset mode, you know, it takes a while to, you know, I wonder if he thought about this. I wonder if they thought about this. Do they know how it impacts this? And so, I looked up Frank Strang on LinkedIn and sent him a note, said, hey, Frank.
You need me.
But yeah. Would you? Yeah. Cup of coffee. And so, he promptly wrote back and said, hey, I'm not on island, but I'll be up in 2 weeks. Let's have a cup of coffee. 2 weeks came and went, and I was just like, okay, send a note. Hey, Frank, hey, you may have come up. I may have missed you. How about that cup of coffee? Another nice note back. And something else, maybe a month went by, and I was just like, okay, this guy thinks I'm a whack job. He thinks I'm crazy. I'm just one of these. So I finally just sent, I said, I'll just give it one more, the old college try. Because I was very interested in the thought process, and I knew I had at least some ideas on how we can set conditions. And I wasn't looking for a job in any way, shape, or form. So I just sent him another final note that just said, hey, listen, I know you think I'm probably crazy, but just so you don't, here's my CV. And a day or two later, he was in my kitchen and we were talking. And I'll tell you, we hit it off just immediately. I saw his vision. He really is a visionary. I saw his vision. And we immediately had the same sort of values, particularly having come from, we were both ex-military. We had the same values and the same sense of teamwork, the same sense of problem solving. And we were off and running.
Nice.
So serendipity, persistence, and I hate to say it, a little bit of LinkedIn, man. Just get out there. Put yourself out there. Got to do it.
Nice. Great. When you said you, after a long military career, you were tired, you wanted to go home, that immediately reminded me of the typical way a Rambo movie starts. Coming home after combat, seeking shelter on the countryside.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, walking around with my Uzi and a bruised face. And yeah, not quite. But
sharpening your knife.
Yes, right? That's right. Music playing in the background.
Fascinating. So your contribution to the Shetland Space Center was also, or originates also from your military career, because you were able to bring in a lot of expertise from a completely different part of the world of expertise. So what is it that we can learn from the military mindset as non-military people?
Wow. Okay. I'm going to think a little bit about this.
Sure.
So just real briefly, Hopkins doesn't do anything easy. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. So I do things more difficult. I make things more difficult for myself. So what did I do? I went from a U.S. institutional military mind to, you know, the United Kingdom, completely civilian, non-military, commercial. And so I'll tell you, it's been a steep learning curve. While I'm used to working with international teams, just moving from that cohort to this cohort is completely new for me. But there are transferable skills, right? So
do you still make your bed? Because there's this general on the internet who says, if you want to be successful, start making your bed.
So I know General McChrystal, and I've worked personally for him. And I think he's one of the best generals on the face of the planet. And to answer your question, yes, I do. I do make my bed every morning. But the skills that are transferable are problem solving, coordination and collaboration. I know all the movies always show this sort of disciplined mindset, but it really is about collaboration and thought partnership and the ability to just problem solve with teams within teams. And that, I think, there's the end. If anybody's seen the movie The Martian, which I love that movie, and at the very end, I've forgotten the name of the protagonist right now, but it'll come to me. But he's gone through this big thing up in Mars, living by himself, and now he's in front of a classroom. And the exact words escape me, but he says it's really all about problem solving. How did he survive on Mars or whatever? And as we, meaning the United Kingdom, work our way through how we are going to conduct ourselves as a space-based nation, it's all about problem solving, collaboration, and of course, yes, the technical skills. And those are all transferable skills from the military. So I hope that answers your question.
Sure. I'm taking total advantage of you being here and having that vast expertise from a military sector. Let's talk about space again, but especially when it comes to military interests. Mm. So what is going on in space when it comes to the military? Because I'm sure that beautiful story about DARPA supposedly parking one of their telescopes in front of NASA headquarters because they had no use for it anymore. And because, of course, they had a much more powerful new toy. And NASA soon discovered that the old one matched or exceeded their best telescope capabilities. So is that story true?
I don't know. I don't know that story, to be honest with you, Marcus. But I think what your story is highlighting is there's a lot of equipment, kit, and personnel out there that can be taken advantage of, if you will. I will tell you, the Shetland Space Center is very interested not only in the commercial, but obviously the non-commercial aspect of things. Again, we have a long and continuous history, not only at the Shetland Space Center or in Shetland on UNST with the military, but also just the United Kingdom, the United States, and all of our partners and allies around the world see that space is a place not only for good, but also a place that needs to be protected. I won't go too much into that. That's not my world anymore, sort of, kind of. You never really let go of the military. But just, it is the absolute truth in that anybody that's following space understands that the space race was not only about, if I go back, you know, to the early 50s, this was about the U.S. It was a space race with U.S., Russia, China, et cetera, et cetera. That's still there. And, you know, let's be adults about this and understand that. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of national pride. There's a sense of national protection, national interest. And that does still exist. So as you can imagine, you only have to read many of the countries' new strategies that are coming out. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not here to make a position about this, but mm-hmm. space will be used and has been used as part of the military apparatus. What I think we want to do, though, is really highlight space for good and everything, all the goodness that happens in terms of space to us here on the ground, everything from our phones to our cars to helping all sorts of folks go about their daily lives. But what we have to do is obviously police ourselves, and we're not always the best at that. Mm-hmm. But hopefully the policy, the strategies, the structure will hopefully catch up in the near term to make sure that we don't ruin ourselves. I was listening to your last podcast with, and Guy, I think was his name. He was the
Vatican astronomer.
Yeah, the Vatican astronomer. Mm-hmm. I listened to that. And he said, and I just really listened to that, he said, we're going to make mistakes as human beings, but as long as we're looking in the right direction and that we're doing our very best to course correct ourselves, then I think that's a good mm-hmm. place to be, if that makes sense. I'm probably averting your question that you're really trying to
answer. It's all good. It's all good. I'm just probing and trying.
Anything, brother, anything.
But speaking of making mistakes, so space debris is a big topic yes. these days. So in how far can the Shetland Space Center reconcile that topic with its own business ventures? Because what you are doing is you're bringing ever more future space debris up there. How does one deal with that?
Oh, that is such a timely and topical question, Marcus. Thank you for asking that. I'll just say up front, I won't have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. But one of the things I really love is Scottish sustainability laws and how they view environmentalism and sustainability. That will directly impact how we conduct business at the Shetland Space Center. What I will tell you is that we are part of a consortium that's specifically looking at, just for purposes of this conversation, space domain awareness, but that includes also traffic management, that includes debris tracking. So we are absolutely exploring that, and we're exploring that with a phenomenal company called Think Tank Maths, who I think Space Cafe has worked with before, a wonderful and world-renowned leader, Marie Baja, and then PA Consultation. So we have been working with them to really think clearly and positively about how we can create not only a business case, but a sustainable business that looks at all of those things. As more and more satellites, as we continue to put more and more things in space to ultimately help us as human beings, we must be responsible for what we do. Yes, to answer your very specific question, it is on everyone's mind, not just the United Kingdom's, but all nations are grappling with this. What I would say is Scotland and the United Kingdom, due to its already pre-existing laws, regulations, etc., are already geared toward that in new space. And then us at the Shetland Space Center have heard that loud and clear. And while there are no specific regulatory requirements at the moment, we're leaning far forward in the foxhole, as I used to say in another life, to make sure that we're being ever responsible. We also work with a company called Pure Energy, which is about green hydrogen, and they are a critical part of our team to ensure that we are doing everything correctly. But that might be another podcast in the future to discuss about the environmentalism and sustainability. But yeah, absolutely. It's on our radar, and we're actively working that problem set right now.
Would you in person be ready to go to space? Ideally, the moon, to Mars?
If someone were to ask me to go tomorrow, besides the fact that I am not in my former military shape, I would have to get out and do a little bit more running. Besides that, because it's true, you have to be. I did a recent interview with a woman who's a doctor and an astro medical doctor, and the things that happen to your body are, you really got to be in tip top shape. But absolutely, if I were asked to go, no hesitation, sign me up. Absolutely.
Good. Wonderful. Last question.
Elon Musk, with you and your billion-dollar franchise and you and your brother going up to space, hey, man, you want another one? I'm happy. I will be your sidekick. I'll take one for the team.
Let me pass this one on. Wonderful. Last question, Yvette. Do you drink coffee? So because you proposed a cup of coffee to your current boss a couple of years ago. Because the question is, at the end of our beautiful podcast, we have a fun tradition, and that is having a space cafe espresso. But of course, we're having not a literal coffee here, but we're having an espresso for the mind, so to say, an inspiration. So what is it that you would like to share with me, with the audience, when it comes to inspiration? So you're free to pick any topic that could serve as a nice piece of inspiration for the audience.
Okay. I didn't know this question was coming, but here I go. Listen,
good.
I am, so I didn't know any of the questions were coming now that I'm thinking about it. So here's what I would say. I would say that if you've ever thought about, dreamt of, considered being connected with space, you can do it. I don't care where you are, who you are. It is achievable. It is an interdisciplinary sport. It is teamwork, and you can do it. I will tell you, I am so jazzed and excited about all the things that are going on. I'm just going to do a quick little side thing here. When ESA just opened up its recent application for astronauts, they foot stomped. We want girls, we want women, and we want disabled. And to me, that makes my heart just pump with joy, because it's, space is for everyone. And you can be old, you can be young. We are reskilling people right now to go into the space sector. You don't have to be Mr. or Mrs. Astrophysicist, photon torpedo to the 15th power. You have a place. You have a place in this. And I would tell you, encourage your kids' dream. They dream of doing something with space. And then something happens along their educational career or their education where they get shut down. And I don't know what that is, but there's lots of studies out there that show that. And we can't do that. We've got to encourage people to live, dream, work, and play in space, because it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And I would just say, get on the bandwagon or cheer from the sidelines. I don't care. And then the other thing I would say, and this is, I always say this about any and everything when an opportunity to talk, and that is, do you. Don't conform to what you think the space sector should be. Do you, and whatever your passion is, bring that to the space sector. Bring whatever you're doing into the space sector and help us develop and prosper new space, because it's for everyone. So thank you for asking that, Marcus.
Wonderful. Yvette, that was a great pleasure to have this opportunity to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, Raul, for being here today. It couldn't be more inspiring, couldn't it? The space industry is waiting for you out there, no matter the skills you have. If you have any doubts still, write Yvette on the palm of your hands, just to remind yourself how she did it. She just wrote to her current boss that he'll probably need her on his team. That's how you do it. I like that. Thank you guys so much for being here today. And as always, whoever is interested in space topics is in good hands at Spacewatch Global. Let them know what you could bring to the table, or let your space geek friends know about this unbiased place of space inspiration. Everyone wins. Thank you for your interest. I look forward to next time. Stay tuned.